This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
That's right. It's the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, ESPN app, ESPN. Sorry, I can't. ESPN everything. Sirius XM Channel 80 or your smart speaker, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. You can reach us at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. Okay, I have a lot I need to do right now. I want to get into Porzingis. I want to get into Embiid. I want to talk about Gordon Hayward because there's news on Gordon Hayward and the Celtics. And I want to take phone calls. But first I have to say, in Max Me Anything, the previous segment, I was asked about Cool G Rap versus Big L. I said, obviously G Rap. And I got a text from a friend of mine saying, oh, he's a Big L fan. What about Big L? Look, Big L was excellent. You know, died tragically way too young. Great MC. Great rapper. You know, but the body of work isn't very big because he was so young. Cool G Rap. Cool G Rap, once upon a time, the argument was who's the best rapper alive, you know, ever. Is it G Rap or Rakim? That's what it came down to. Cool G Rap at his best, there was no MC who ever lived where when the new verse came out on a song or song came out that you heard where you like rewound every single line and you waited on that new verse like a Cool G Rap verse. And anyone who wrote rhymes, at least in New York back then, like late 80s, G Rap would drop a verse, tear up your stuff, start again. That why do you think when Jay-Z said hearing me rap is like hearing G Rap in his prime. In his prime, because G Rap in his prime was in that, for your era, it never got better than that. When Nas dropped, that was like Cool G Rap and Rakim had a baby, and it was not. And people considered Nas immediately the best ever because it was like a mixture of those two. Gee, to sleep on G Rap. I saw G Rap on one of those video mixtapes. Once, this is going back already 10 years, saying, yo, I'm G-Rap, I'm a legend on the East Coast. Like, people back then didn't know who he was. Put you up on some G-Rap. Love Big L, but G-Rap is different. All right, look. There's something about MCs in hip-hop, comparing them. It is like having a sports talk. It's like, you know, everyone has their hierarchy. I guess it's barbershop talk and ranking and who's better than who. Gordon Hayward's out for 4 weeks. And it's not the bad leg, it's the good leg, which is now a bad leg for the next 4 weeks. Celtics ain't going to be in the playoffs for the next 4 weeks, I don't think. It does make you think, by the way, that's a real hit for the Celtics. The Celtics are not big in the front court, not that Hayward is, but they rely on firepower to offset that, right? I like Theis a lot. I think Theis is an above-average starting power forward or center, whatever. But he's small for that position. And for to be your strongest front court player physically, right? Tatum is maybe eventually the best player or offensive player on a championship team. And Kemba Walker is the best approximation of Kyrie. Not quite Kyrie, obviously, but the best approximation of Kyrie, plus good in the locker room instead of bad in the locker room. And then you look at Jaylen Brown, really good two-way player, and Gordon Hayward, who should be the same thing. Like that's a big piece to take out. Now you look at the matchup with the Sixers. The Sixers have all kinds of issues because without Ben Simmons, one of their two best players, who's having maybe he's the best defensive player in the world this year. And also underrated offensively because he can't shoot. People don't realize how good he is offensively, maybe. But that's a real problem for the Sixers because the Sixers, Al Horford, can bring the ball up if you need him to, let alone defend the rim, like protect the paint, protect the rim. He can post up. Like, what do you want from his offense? You want him to post up? You want him to shoot a three? What do you need him to do? On defense, you want him to defend in space? You want him to defend what do you need him to do? He could do everything, but he can't play the four? It's bizarre. But apparently, it came out that he's never played the four at any professional level ever. I don't think in college or high school, dude just never played the four. Bizarre. Can't play next to Embiid. So you got to break up their minutes, right? And that's one of the reasons Brett Brown could put Ben Simmons in the dunker spot. Even going back to last year, he did that because Simmons won't shoot. But now with Shake Milton, maybe you really can do that. But now you can't play Ben Simmons at the four because he's not available. and you really don't have enough shooting. Josh Richardson, you're thinking in a good year, maybe can he shoot it well enough? The answer is no. You know, not just Jimmy Butler, but they lost shooting last year. I thought Redick was his transition defense was a real, was probably the problem for the Sixers. But damn, maybe I would take that in exchange for that shooting right now if I was a Sixers fan. But when you add that all up, the Sixers need Embiid to be dominant. And the criticism that Brett Brown has to keep feeding the ball, even if it's not going great because that's your best chance, that's true. But when the double team comes and Embiid's getting stripped and Embiid's turning the ball over, at a certain point, you can't just be, Brett Brown's right, you can't be that predictable. It's tough for those guys. You know, Embiid has to assert himself. And what it really comes down to is he has to play better. He can't play well enough to be considered among the best bigs. He needs to dominate. I'm not saying anything new. Everyone's saying this. Meantime, for the Celtics, without Gordon Hayward, if they do beat the Sixers, which I think they will, I think they shoot it too well to lose that series. How long are they going to last? Would you take the Celtics or the Raptors? Raptors, especially without Gordon Hayward. And I thought the Celtics, I did not rule them out. They had a puncher's chance to go all the way this year. It's a weird year at the bubble, no home court, all that kind of stuff. Who knows? They could catch fire. But without Hayward now, I take the Raptors against them. I take Milwaukee against them, for sure. Winner of Pacers, Heat? Yep, I think I would take that. Let's assume it's the Heat for a second. I take the Heat against them. It's a bad, bad blow for Boston right now. And Hayward has not been able to stay healthy since he left Utah and went to Boston, you know? I know he was blamed somewhat for the... What was that, Chris? Chris just said something in my ear and I couldn't hear. Oh, okay. I know he was blamed by Stephen A. Smith on First Take and others also. Blamed Hayward because, you know, coach really likes Hayward and, you know, they have experience together and that was the real problem on the Celtics. It caused locker room division. Oh, stop it. Everything was fine when Kyrie wasn't playing. They got along better. Did they force feed Hayward too much? Yeah, probably. Probably they did. But he has not been the problem. He could have been part of the solution, but out for 4 weeks. That really hurts. I'm going to take a call or two. I'm going to sneak a call in right now. I said I was going to talk Porzingis. I'm going to save Porzingis. Raj, what do we have coming up in the next block?
Well, Max, you know, we got the baddest man on the planet coming up in the next block. And when you guys mess around with the baddest man on the planet and, you know, I don't want no trouble, I think we need to make sure we take care of him.
So no
we're
question.
Gonna talk so this, to so, the champion, so, right. so, the so champion who's setting records. He out there that,
that's
out
right.
He out there
and there's news,
retiring
too.
Hall
all right, that's
famers.
Enough. We don't need to know all this stuff.
Well, you asked me.
I said, what's it?
You come to me, man. I'm like the Tasmanian devil, man. I got all kinds of stuff. I've been sitting over here listening to you rap loquaciously about stuff, and I want to get on.
This is just Raj's excuse to put his headshot up there. This failed modeling career or something. What's that about? What's that headshot about, Raj? Imagine taking that shot and thinking, yeah, I look really fresh. I'm going to put this on national TV. Can you show that shot again? Look at that. Anyway. Right, we got to get to our guest coming up. So after that, I'm going to get back into Porzingis. A lot of stuff going on today. It's nice to have sports back. By the way, Stipe Miocic beats Daniel Cormier. Close, tough fight, by the way, but beats him. Wins the trilogy. Is considered by many the greatest heavyweight in the history of the UFC now. And then John Jones today. He's stepping away. He's giving up his lightweight championship. Is he moving up to heavyweight? Does he want to fight Stipe? What does the champ say about this? Because John Jones is considered by many the greatest MMA fighter of all time. And Stipe is considered by many the greatest UFC heavyweight champion of all time. How'd you like that for a heavyweight matchup to determine the baddest man on the planet? The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. The baddest man on the planet calls, and we answer. We answer that call. Coming up on The Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
And still, the undisputed UFC heavyweight champion. champion of the world, Stipe Miocic.
Tired. I'll go home.
Let's go to the eye poke.
Look at my eye.
It's pretty significant.
I can't see anything out of my left eye.
Black.
It's black. So.
Wow.
This is the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, or your smart speaker, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. You can reach us at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. Once upon a time, the heavyweight champion of the world, the boxing heavyweight champion of the world, was considered the baddest man on the planet. Muhammad Ali used to talk about, I'm the heavyweight champion of the whole wide world, of Earth. You know what that means? If the Martian champion comes down here, he has to fight me. Mike Tyson actually called himself. He coined it, I'm the baddest man on the planet. And for Tyson, it wasn't just about being heavyweight champ. It's the way he was winning his fights. He wasn't finessing guys. He was coming to knock their heads off. But with the rise of MMA, especially the UFC as a brand, because MMA more closely resembles an actual fight than a boxing match, it is fair to say that the UFC heavyweight champion is in fact the baddest man on the planet. And that man is named Stipe Miocic. And he just, in many people's minds, either cemented himself or claimed the crown as the greatest heavyweight champion in UFC, if not MMA, history. Although Fedor still has a lot of adherents. Certainly in the UFC, a lot of people are saying Stipe is now the greatest heavyweight champion of all time. Welcome now on the Max Kellerman Show. He just beat Daniel Cormier in a close, tough fight to win their trilogy. The heavyweight champion of the world, Stipe Miocic. Stipe, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
First of all, let me apologize. Why should I apologize? Chris, why don't you come on and apologize to Stipe for what happened yesterday? Come on. Come on the air. Do you have
Stipe,
a microphone there?
I am tremendously sorry that I hit a wrong button and somehow put you somewhere where you heard the show, but we didn't think you were there.
Wait, Chris, you're so bad at this. Get out of here. Look, Stipe, that's actually funny. So we thought that he clicked you off. You actually could hear us talking about you, but you just couldn't say anything?
Yeah, I had no idea what was going on.
All right. Well, Chris apologized. Chris, all I want you to do is say, I'm sorry, champ. Okay, can you say that?
I'm sorry, champ.
All right, that's it. He even dragged that out a little too long. Okay, good. Stipe.
It's okay, Chris.
Okay, there you go. See, he's a forgiving man. You're lucky, Chris. I was going to put you in the octagon with him. Stipe, so congratulations, first of all, on a very tough win against a great fighter to win your trilogy. How's it? How are you feeling after since the fight?
Oh, tired, you know, but I feel good. Honestly, I feel a lot better than I thought I would. Honestly, it was a tough fight. You know, you're not going to feel great after going 25 minutes with such a great fighter also. So, I mean, I'm just happy got the W, and I'm not too badly beat up.
He rocked you. Forgive me if I get the rounds wrong already, right? But he rocked you. I think it was in the first round at the end of the round, but you responded very well to it with a right hand. You then really hurt him. I want to say it was at the end of the second round and really had him badly hurt, it seemed to me. He poked you in the eye early. You poked him late. Again, your shot was worse than his. First, tell me about the shot that seemed to buzz you at the end of the first round. How bad were you hurt?
No, it sucked. And no one like getting poked in the eye. It's not a fun time at all. But it was fine. Just, need a little time to make my right and, make sure it wasn't watering too much.
Champ, your phone is coming a little bit in and out, a little static on the line. Listen, it's probably Chris. It's probably Chris's fault. We both know that. Chris, will you connect some wire that you're messing up again for the second day in a row? Champ, so then when you had him hurt at the end of the second, and it was back and forth, but I thought you fairly won the fight, though it was close. Was your poke retaliation for his?
Not at all. I legit had no idea that I did that until in between rounds I looked up on the monitor and I saw myself poking him in the eye. I felt actually terrible because that's not how I fight. I actually apologized to him quite a few times. I felt bad.
Okay. So I thought that Cormier, not that you can't wrestle, obviously, but Cormier's really background is wrestling and fell in love with his power a little bit, maybe made a tactical error against you because he had success with his power. In one fight, you weathered the storm. In another fight, you didn't. And again, was looking to counter you with right hands instead of, it seemed to me, take it to the ground. Your thoughts on the way he fought you?
He's a gamer, and that guy comes every time. You know, so you know what to expect. You know, he's a great wrestler, but also he can strike. He has great volume. He puts pressure on guys. He gets guys tired. So, he got that first takedown, but I think I popped up right when my buddy's mat, and I got, get right back to my feet. Fought off the little headlock he had, and I think that kind of showed me, listen, I'm here, I'm good. You try to take me down, I'm going to get right back up.
Once again, Chris has not connected a wire because you were breaking up badly there. Stipe,
I've been doing a...
hold on a second, Stipe. Chris, come on the air and apologize to the viewers now for not doing something right.
You just, the whole world, I am sorry to the whole world.
Okay,
today.
Good. That's enough out of you. Stipe, so, by the way, you saw that spinning elbow, like, that you don't see it that often on that level. What gave you the nerve to try that?
I just, we were actually working on that a lot, and, against the clinch, and my coach said, hey, if it's there, try it, and so... I was trying to aim a little bit higher, but I caught in the body, but I still think I hurt him.
Yeah, for sure. That was an impressive move. So you win the fight, and now people are saying he's the greatest heavyweight in the history of the UFC, and some are saying, hey, the greatest MMA heavyweight ever. What is your feeling about your rank in MMA heavyweight history and UFC heavyweight history?
Honestly, it's just great to be in that conversation and be put up there. I mean, honestly, I'm just blessed and grateful. When I started, I never thought in a million years I'd be in the position I am. I work hard at everything I do. I just, got some good breaks and, caught some good people in the right time. And I'm just happy. Honestly, I can't complain. I'm just blessed.
So John Jones stepping away, giving up his light heavyweight championship, and many people consider him the greatest MMA fighter ever, or in the history of the UFC for sure. A lot of people feel that way. And he mentions interest at heavyweight, and you are the heavyweight champ. What is your feeling about a potential matchup with John Jones? That is a big, big fight, the likes of which, the light heavyweight division's usually been the glamour division in the UFC. But that might change if John Jones moves up to fight you. Your thoughts on a John Jones fight?
Yeah, I'll fight anyone. That's what I always say. I don't care who it is. But right now, I'm just trying to heal up, rest up, and enjoy the family. Enjoy the rest of the summer right now.
Meantime, it's been reported that Dana White wants you to defend in a rematch against Francis Ngannou, the Predator, right? And he's scored a lot of spectacular knockouts, but you exposed him in your first fight in certain ways. Are you interested in that rematch, or would you like to skip that and go straight to John Jones if it's available?
No, honestly, it's like a toss-up. It just depends what UFC wants. Honestly, because Francis he's done a lot of fights. He's doing great. And, John Jones is the best of all time. And so it's just a tough one just because, who deserves it more? And, you got to look at Francis because he's done so well. But at the same time, John Jones is, an animal. So, like I said, though, I'm not really worried about that right now. I'm just trying to heal up and enjoy my family and have, bad chance.
Ngannou would be favored against you in the rematch, which I don't think is right. I just don't agree with those odds, especially considering the outcome of the first fight. Who should be favored, Stipe Miocic versus John Jones, champ?
In Vegas, the book says John Jones.
And you believe he should be favored against you?
Listen, I'm used to it, but I'm not favored, so it's not a big deal to me.
Champ,
Vegas
thank
hates
you.
Me.
Vegas, well, the fans love you. Stipe, thank you for joining me today. Congratulations on your win, and I'd love to see you defend the heavyweight championship of the UFC against John Jones. That's the fight I'd like to see. Thanks again, champ.
Thanks for having me.
This is the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, brought to you by Shell V Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. Let me say that again so it's smooth. Shell V Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. I'll say it again. It wasn't smooth either. Shell V Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. There you go. By the way, two brothers hit a home run in the same game. The question is, are the Dodgers and Yankees on a collision course? Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. This is the Max Kellerman Show. I'm Max Kellerman on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, or your smart speaker. Reach us at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. I want to get to calls all the time, but I'm so in love with the sound of my own voice, it's hard. It's time for the Progressive MLB snapshot. The Seager brothers played each other, Seattle versus L.A., the Dodgers and the Mariners. And Kyle Seager's a nice third baseman for the Mariners. And of course, Corey is a star shortstop for the Dodgers. And they both homered in the game, homered in the same game. You know, Corey Seager, when you look at the trajectory of his career as a 21-year-old rookie, the things that he did said, oh, my God, this is a future Hall of Famer. And then his next year, maybe it was a little bit disappointing as a follow-up. Still an excellent player, but you're like, well, but sometimes that happens, right? Your second year, that's not a they call it a sophomore slump because the league adjusts. Now, you still have to readjust. And a lot of times that third season then becomes, okay, now this guy's entering his prime. Sometimes I noticed they never get better than in their third season. But then Seager got hurt. So he had that little sophomore slump. Then he got hurt, and he needed Tommy John surgery, and he had a year off, and it takes a while to come back. It's good to see him back on track because his talent at an early age said that he should reach like dizzying heights. And while he's a very good player, he hasn't quite done that yet. Meantime, the Yankees keep rolling. They're beating teams. Everyone's hurt. Everyone's hurt. And they're beating teams. And by the way, that's because guys like Jordan Montgomery, a good lefty, people don't even remember from a couple years ago, was one of the best rookies that year. Like a guy who can really pitch. He starts the game. He doesn't even make it through four innings, but nowadays that's not the end of the world. And the Yankees have so many bats. They have a platoon at first base. Both guys are like 350, 500, 350 on base, 500 guys. Andujar, who was one of the best rookies that same year that Jordan Montgomery was, can't get any at-bats. Even with all the injuries, he can't get at-bats because Urshela has such a great bat at third base and is a much better defensive player. Clint Frazier swinging the bats. Like the Yankees are just extremely deep. Gleyber Torres, Gary Sanchez. So Judge goes down, no problem. Severino goes down, no problem. That's a powerhouse baseball team, both the Yankees and the Dodgers. You know, who knows in baseball, right? But because the best team doesn't always win. But they look like they're on a collision course since the preseason in the World Series. Be the first time all those World Series they played in the 50s and in the late 70s. Be the first time they've met in the World Series since 81, if that happens. Where the Yankees went up 2-0 and then the Dodgers came back on the strength of Fernando Valenzuela. All right. I said I was going to get to calls. I'm going to do it. Sam in Marlboro. Oh, excuse me.
Congratulations.
Hold on a second, Sam. MLB Snapshot is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Go ahead, Sam.
Max, I'm glad you got your own show, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Continue.
First, three quick points. Listen, the Porzingis trade, come on, man. Like, seriously, first of all, I just want to point out that when he allegedly had that meeting that he wants to leave New York, which I think you support because, you know, Dolan's quote-unquote incompetence.
Yeah.
He gave them a list of 14. The Mavs were not on it. But guess what? They still traded him the same day in a trade, well-executed trade. They got the most for a player who, the more you waited, tell me the last time the Knicks got two first-round picks, Max.
Hold on. So who cares? What did they do with them? It's a bad organization. When you give picks to people who are not smart, they make bad decisions, and they develop poorly. Hold on. Porzingis, you just dare him to walk away from the rookie extension. No one in the history of basketball does. The reason everyone stays 6 years with the team that drafts them and then demands a trade, and you trade him in that seventh season or else we'll let him walk as a free agent after seven seasons, is the collective bargaining agreement is such that it overwhelmingly incentivizes top flight players to stay with their teams. They walk away from too much money. No one ever does it. But Porzingis called their bluff, and they didn't call his back because they're weak and stupid, or at least they make weak and stupid decisions. It's a big thing in the media. You don't make ad hominem attacks. So people do stupid things, but don't call them stupid. But if you do 100 stupid things out of 100 things that you've done, at what point do you get to call someone stupid? That's what I want to know. All right, who's up? Someone, they keep telling me, I got to get to this call. Who is it? Gelato Drew in L.A. You're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
What's going on, Max? Glad to have you back in L.A. Glad to have somebody on the radio talking combat sports. Real quick, before I get into my points, you got the best producer in the game right there, my boy Raj.
Very
one half of
so
solid
far.
Gold.
You have to and, get to say something interesting now. They told me it was an interesting call.
I'm going on record right now. Teofimo Lopez is going to start Loma. He's going to spark him out inside of 9 rounds. And I love Stipe, but he ain't the GOAT. Until he goes on a Fedor run like Fedor did in Prime, he's still catching up. And John Jones ain't the GOAT because, you know, he tested positive a few times. So
I agree with all those opinions, except for I don't think I don't make Teo a favorite against Lomachenko, but certainly he could knock out Lomachenko. We've seen Lomachenko have a tough time with Luke Campbell, who's an excellent fighter. We've seen Lomachenko get knocked down by Linares, who does not punch like Teo. And Teo also has real hand speed and some skills. But I think Lomachenko is the favorite there. In terms of John Jones not being the GOAT based on those failed PED tests, I agree with you. I think he has more to prove. And in terms of Fedor being considered the greatest heavyweight in MMA history, fine, but okay. I think that's the consensus, actually. And I probably agree with it. But Stipe may be in UFC history. So there it is. What do we got coming up here, Raj? Oh, this last take already? We're done with this show? God, this time flies. I'm so entertaining. All right. You saw First Take this morning. Coming up, you're going to hear Last Take. Plus, more from you, the callers. Maybe. I don't know. Those two calls, I was told they were great calls. They were okay. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. This is the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80 on your smart speaker. Reach us at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. All right, this is a segment we call Last Take. We go over something that happened on First Take, and then I respond to it. It's a very clever play on First Take. Last Take is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports. On First Take today, we had Paul Feinbaum to talk about North Carolina's decision to play football in spite of the fact that because of COVID outbreaks, they are not going to have students on campus. Here's Paul Feinbaum.
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's Last Take.
The University of North Carolina is saying, listen, we don't want to ruin the party. We want to get to September 12th or 26th or whatever the starting date is so we can make the other guys look bad for shutting down too early. And in reality, that's what happened. Nobody's saying we should have college football, at least in intercollegiate athletics. They're all using the cliches. We're cautiously optimistic. We're moving with safety protocols carefully. I mean, they're boring us to death, but they're still making their claim. But the Big Ten looks so bad, guys, that everyone else is even more determined than ever to get closer to the starting line. At some point, that chancellor is going to have to make another vote.
I mean, if you don't have students on campus, you can't play football. Duh. This does not, it's not rocket science, everybody. If the students can't be on campus, how can the student-athletes play football? Because it's not about being student-athletes. It's about being athletes. They're a commodity that generate revenue. That's it. And I'm sure the NCAA isn't happy about this because their hypocrisy is laid bare. And probably, if stuff like this continues, student-athletes, so to speak, will be able to unionize, right? They can point to examples as evidence that they're not treated like other students. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. I'm used to doing a 4-hour and 15-minute when we did crosstalk with the shows preceding us and after us with Marcellus Wiley in L.A. This is a 2-hour show. It flies by. I didn't even get a chance to talk about Donovan Mitchell. Dude dropped 57 points. They lost, but he got it to overtime in a game they were losing. And then they were winning, and then he had an 8-second violation. All right, whatever. But still, 57 points in a playoff game. Dude is 6'1". And I know we're in an era where these ridiculous cartoonish numbers are possible nowadays for primary ball handlers or very high usage players. But still, 57 points, no matter what metric you run that through, to translate it to any era, it's a whole lot of points for a guy that size and did it relatively efficiently. Donovan Mitchell's a special player. Andre in Massachusetts, you're on the Max Kellerman Show.
How you doing, Max? Thanks for taking my call. That was an outstanding performance. Donovan Mitchell, of course, that eight-second violation was tough down the stretch. And then, of course, Jamal Murray did what he did, and it was just lights out, but a great game. I started off, I had a LeBron take that I wanted to chime in, but I want to kind of connect that because I'm calling from Mass, and you kind of talked about Gordon Hayward and that situation. So to the point, I don't have much time. LeBron is up against it in the West. He's already hedging his bets, but my view is the league wants Lakers, the league needs Lakers Clippers in the Western Conference Finals. I think that's
now, hold on, Andre, I'm going to leave. Is Andre still on the line? Okay, good. Andre, I'm going to show you how to be a better radio caller, okay? You have good energy. I like it. You even have an accent, but you sound like you're from New York originally. But anyway, you started out by repeating stuff I'd said. You said, what's up? And then you just restated facts that I just said. You have an interesting point. Lead with it. Your point is, you think the league wants the Lakers in the finals. So this has been an argument that many people have had, conspiracy theorists about the NBA. They wanted Patrick Ewing in New York. They rigged the lottery. They want Michael Jordan in the finals. They give him every call, right? And people feel that way about LeBron and the Lakers. If you are prone to that kind of thinking, you will absolutely have reason to believe, and certainly there is financial incentive, to get LeBron James, the biggest star on the planet Earth, with the Lakers, the number one brand by far in the history of basketball worldwide, and the most successful franchise of all time. Apologies, Celtics, but most of their championships, the vast majority, 13 of them, occurred BC. You know, occurred before the common era, before the modern era, before the advent of the three-point shot, right? It really changed the game when the ABA was absorbed into the NBA, and you had a three-point shot now in the NBA. Since then, the Celtics have won 4. The Lakers have won 10. So, yeah, the Lakers in L.A., the second biggest market, and the portal through which we export American culture, which is actually our number one export, and the biggest star, yes, it would seem that there's all the incentive in the world for the Lakers to be on that stage. Would I be shocked if LeBron got some close calls? No, I would not. He's the biggest star, and that is a benefit to the Lakers. I think you have reason to believe that, and it's not unjustified. I don't think the series is going to be that close. I don't think they're going to need to want the Lakers in the finals to get by Portland. Leonard in Maryland, you're on the Max Kellerman Show.
Hey, Max, how you feel?
I'm feeling fine, Leonard. This is not a social call, Leonard. What do you have to say?
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah, I got two things for you. Let's go to boxing. Of all the fights that's left scheduled this year, Teofimo, Lomo, both Charlo twins got good fights, and of course Tank and Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. What you think is the most intriguing and how you see it playing out?
The most intriguing fight. The Charlo brothers have a doubleheader, a lot on the line at junior middleweight, but I think Lomachenko and Teo is the most interesting fight to me, followed by Spence and Danny Garcia, because we'll see what Spence has left. Those are the two most interesting fights on the docket so far. Raul and Callie, you're on the Max Kellerman Show. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a
some of it. It's going to change the
So hold on one second, Raul, because Chris failed to connect something there. Start again.
Yeah. So obviously, with the whole NBA bubble, it's going to change the landscape of the NBA. So I was just wondering, what previous moment or game in NBA history would you change, and what do you think the outcome of that would be on the league today?
What previous moment? What moment? Oh, well, personally, if Olajuwon doesn't get the tips of his fingers on that John Stark shot in Game 6, not Game 7, Game 6, and that shot goes in, the Knicks win a championship, and, you know, my life would be complete. But that didn't happen. So that's just, you know, personal. But I think, I don't know what you mean. What shot would change the course of league history? I don't know. I wish I had a better answer. Max Kellerman Show, Shanae Angola Jr. coming right up, ESPN Radio.